credit card companies take 2-3%. American Express takes 4%, right, from the merchant. It's highway robbery, right? UPI is free. Every overnight success story is 20 years in the making, as I always say, right? In India, marriage is not an if question. It's a when question. I think this is the first time in our history that we have clarity and vision in terms of what we want to achieve.
Hello and welcome. I'm Anupam Kher. In the ever-evolving landscape of 21st century, the focus now more than ever is on India-Bharat. My guest tonight is an Indian business executive and angel investor. He's a shark on Shark Tank India and the founder of India's oldest online matchmaking service, Shaadi.com. Welcome, Anupam Mittal.
Thank you, Mr. Anupam Kher. I find it odd to say my name, but I'm proud to be sharing my name with you.
So am I. Who decided about to keep your name Anupam?
My mother and Nani decided.
Okay.
And, you know, it was still an unusual name when I was born.
Hmm.
You know, it means unique.
Not comparable.
Not comparable. Actually, yeah. That's a better definition. Yeah. Incomparable.
So there are two people sitting here right now.
Haji.
Who can't be compared to anybody.
To anyone. Yeah?
The only difference is one person has 15,000 crores and the other person doesn't have even 15 crores. But of course, made with a lot of hard work.
And parents' blessings.
Parents
we are
blessings.
Karmic people.
Yes.
We believe in the cycle of life.
Yes. Yeah. What did your father do? And what is his name?
His name is Gopal Krishan Mittal.
Okay.
He just passed away earlier this year. God bless his soul. My dad, you know, comes from a very humble background. His father died when he was about 16 years old and he had 4 sisters and 3 brothers to look after in Rajasthan. So he has to stop school and he took up a job which paid him 100 rupees a month in Kolkata and slowly moved to Mumbai. And by the time he came to Mumbai, he had started to do a little better in terms of salary. And then I was born and I saw him throughout my life spending, you know, 16 hours a day at work, building a life for himself and us. But he built up his businesses in textile.
Mm.
So he had a job and then he made enough money to set up his own businesses. He set up factories in Dombivli and Bhiwandi, which are far-flung suburbs of Mumbai, and become an industrialist in his own right. And to come from nothing at that point is very difficult,
mm-hmm.
right? In sort of just post-independent India, he was born in, and then to sort of, the opportunities were not as much as they are today,
mm.
right? And the only way you could do it is through sheer hard work, determination and will. You know, I have huge respect and admiration and he's my role model in many ways. He started out as a very strict, aggressive father in some ways. But towards the second half, he had become so philosophical and, you know, he was very spiritual. His view had become over time, not about what you can do for me, but what can I do for you? So I remember I spent 10 years in the US and whenever I used to call, he had only 2 questions. He used to say, are you happy? I'd say, yeah, dad. And he'd say, do you need something? I'd say, no. He'd say, okay, talk to your mom. Right. So there was never any, when are you coming back? What are you going to do? Never any demand for him. It was always, what can I do for you?
Mm.
And so I think that was very powerful and enabling for me as an individual.
Were you understanding it at that time that it was powerful or that happened later on?
It happened later on. In fact, kind of thought of it as being aloof.
Yes.
I felt that why isn't he asking me more things? Why isn't he more involved in my life? So at some level, I kind of held it against him for a very long time and you picked up on that.
Mm.
But, you know, as I introspect and I look back, I think it gave me the freedom and the wings to be able to, you know, go anywhere and do anything without having to feel the pressure of, oh my God, I have to, you know, dear by my duty of being the only son and being with my parents.
My father was a clerk in the forest department. We were poor.
Where was this?
In Shimla.
In Shimla.
So when I made it in movies, every conversation will end up, can you send me some more money? So after some time, it started irritating me. So I said, if you finish a conversation with that, I will not talk to you. If you call me up and used to in the end say, are you listening to what I'm not saying?
Mm.
So, means basically saying the same thing.
Yeah.
And when he passed away, and I went to Shimla, and when I went to Shimla to do his prayer ceremony, thousands of people came because he was very popular as a person. He was very helpful. And there were about 50 people in the line to say thank you to me. And they said 50 people, he said he was running our homes.
Wow. And
that was what he was doing with the money that I was sending him.
That is so amazing. And unsung, no? Not announcing.
Not announcing, yes.
And that's very much like my father when he just passed away recently. There were people who were there from far-flung areas of India who he was helping throughout his life. But he never told us either, right? So, yeah, I can totally understand. I think it's very powerful when a lot of people give, but very few people give unannounced.
What made you come back to India after 10 years?
Because I saw my dad working 16 hours and, you know, all the time doing business. That's the only thing I knew. As a teenager, I tried a few different businesses and I tried working with my dad as well since he had his business, but nothing was working out. And because I was kind of young and brash, and perhaps India was very different at that point, right? We're talking, you know, 90s now, you know, and India was just opening up as a country. We were still a very closed socialist society. So I kind of blamed India. I said, hey, you know, this is all because there's no opportunity here. People don't get it. They don't live up to their word. So I'm going to go overseas. So I took off to Europe. I ran out of money. I came back home with my tail between my legs. Then I said, nahi, Europe mein problem. The problem is with Europe. So this time I said, US. US is where the dreams are made. India that I grew up in was very top down. While it was socialist in some respect, you know, you never said anything against your elders. Or if your teacher said something in class, you never actually questioned that. And the modus operandi was the teachers would read out their books in class and you used to just sit and listen. And I never got that. I said, I can do this at home. Why am I attending class? And very interestingly, when I was in the US the first day in class, one of my co-students said to the teacher, Steve, I don't agree with you. I was shocked. I said, first of all, you're calling the teacher by his name. And secondly, you're saying you don't agree with the teacher. How is that even possible? And I said, you're in trouble, boy. But turns out, Steve, the professor, he said, Tom, why don't you agree with me? Can you share your perspective? And he encouraged dissent. And after that, you know, he shared with us how there are multiple perspectives to look at the same problem. But my life had changed. I kept my hand up all the time just because I could say, I don't agree with you, right? Even if I agreed. And what I realized at that point and in the subsequent time is that your perspective, regardless of what it is, matters, right? And that builds confidence. And I think from there, I was able to take away a lot. And in fact, I would call those my formative years. Here in India, I was always in trouble. I was getting into bad company. I didn't know what I wanted just because I was getting claustrophobic. And there, I started to believe in myself. And once that happened, you know, I got a job after college. It took me a while to find a job. But once I worked and inculcated that work ethic, I started to believe that I could do anything, I could build anything. And so, you know, after 8-10 years there, I said, look, maybe it's time to be proud in my own crowd, right? Maybe it's time to get back to mom and dad. And, you know, I've been away far long enough. And that's kind of when I decided that, look, let's set up a company, let's set up a business, let's see how it does. And if it starts doing well, I'll move back. And that 2003, 2004 is when I moved back full time.
Did you reach a saturation point and came back, or because you genuinely felt that it's time to do something for India? When you achieve, you want to move on.
That's right.
That's what your graph says of life, not only as a successful businessman or an entrepreneur, but as a person also.
Yeah, it was a couple of things. One, the company that I was working in, you know, this was after the dot-com implosion happened. And so it was going through its own struggles. So I knew that, look, there's maybe not a very long future, a bright future here. But in parallel, I did have job offers from other companies who wanted me to come in as one of their co-founders or early employees. And they were giving me, by the way, in my early 20s in the company I was working in, I had risen up quite rapidly and I was a multimillionaire in my early 20s, right? At least on paper. The fact remains that after that, I lost it all and I became bankrupt before I moved to India. And I was actually in debt, which I had to clear off before I moved here because of some bad decisions. But I had done very well for myself. So there were other companies that wanted to hire me and they offered me X salary, which was always in six figures for somebody in their early 20s. I mean, you can buy any car you want, you can live anywhere you want. And they offered me leadership positions. But I always had a counter for them in terms of offer. I felt my worth was more, right? But nobody quite, we couldn't bridge the gap on two occasions. Yeah. You know, at that stage in life, I don't know how involved your decision making is. It becomes more about, okay, you didn't give me what I want, or maybe I'm going to do something else, as opposed to maybe, so what? You know, let's find a way to, you know, meet halfway. So I think it was a bit of that. And it was a bit of kuch bada karna. I want to do something big. My dreams were becoming bigger because I had just seen this whole internet thing become something in the US. And I knew that it's going to take over the world at some point. So my dreams were becoming bigger. At the same time, I was feeling separation anxiety. I've been here so many years. I've created these circles. I've created these friendships. And this lifestyle, how am I going to give it up? So I did something, what I think in hindsight was very smart. I started spending more and more time in India every year. So first year I spent 3-4 months. Next year I spent 6 months. And so it took me 3 years to complete the transition. In fact, after I moved back, for 2 years, I did not even give up the home that I had rented. I was still paying rent from here because it was just such a big decision, right, to let go of everything that I had spent 10 years doing.
Is that when you started Shaadi.com?
That's when I started.
Because you couldn't have started Shaadi.com in America.
Actually, I did.
You did?
I did.
Did it work?
In India at that point, this is, a lot has changed. But to hire a software engineer was 7,000 rupees a month. To hire a designer was 5,000 rupees a month. So I had, on one of my vacations, hired 7-8 people. It was like a rounding off error in the paycheck that I was getting, right? It was nothing. It was $500 a month. And, you know, my dad had some office space, which was kind of lying, you know, behind a cow shed, which was just a room lying around. So I started using that. And then I used to work nights over there, moonlighting with these guys, trying to think of different businesses that we could do. And we actually started a bunch of businesses. And I've sold a couple of them since then. But of course, Shaadi.com became the most popular. So that's how people know me. But we launched Makan.com. We launched a couple of other gaming businesses. We were one of the first in the country to launch a gaming business. But Shaadi.com, interestingly, was a very unique story because one of the years when I was here in India, I was very independent. So my dad, at that point, we had developed a camaraderie and a friendship. So he wouldn't tell me. And as I said to you earlier, he had become very philosophical. What can I do for you, not what can you do for me? So he would never put the pressure on me that, boy, you should get married and these meet this person. So one day as I was sitting, a gentleman posing as my dad's friend came in, right? And, you know, it's a typical traditional way that matchmaking happened in India. And, you know, very soon, within 5 minutes in the conversation, I was pretty clear who he is because, you know, he opened up this briefcase on my desk and he started pulling out biodatas. But I got very intrigued because I was just coming from US where everything was tech-enabled. Internet was just becoming a thing. I said, how many of these biodatas do you carry? He said, oh, I carry about 50, 60 in my bag, but I have more. You want to see more? No. I said, how many people do you know in your community? He said, maybe 200 or so. So I said, therefore, my choice of life partner is limited by how much weight you can carry and how far you can travel.
Good one.
So he looked at me a little confused and puzzled and maybe a little insulted. I said, look, I'm not trying to demean your business. My only point is, why don't you give me all these biodata? I have this team of people. We are building different businesses. We will take them and put them on the internet.
Yeah.
Now, anywhere in the world, people can find the, you know, person of their dreams. Why just limit it to me? And he said yes, but he looked at me as if I was crazy. And he never came back. The idea was born. And so we said, look, this is interesting. And so we seeded it. We built this website. I went back. And what we found was the need for this service was much more pronounced in America, in the UK, because these were geographically dispersed Indians who wanted to connect with like-minded people and their networks, they were very small. And so that started to take off. So we focused only, anyway, India didn't have much of an internet. There was only 8-10 million people on the internet and it remained like that for 10 years. Right, so that's where the business started to grow. And, you know, I established offices in the US, UK, and we kind of built it out. And then I moved back, as I said, in 2004.
And that became a success overnight or?
No, it took a while. Yeah. Every overnight success story is 20 years in the making, as I always say, right?
Right.
It's just that when people see it, they suddenly see it. Of course, we started 2002, 2003 with full focus and gusto. And I think it took a few years until we started seeing some form of success.
So do you think that 2003, we are in 2024 now, How come it's still so relevant? We seem to be now in India also having live-in relationships. We are much more different outlook towards life, towards relationships, marriage and things like that. Who are these people who use your...
How did you meet your wife, Anupam?
We were best of friends.
You were best of friends.
Yeah.
You know, I actually just posted a reel on Instagram recently talking about the secret to successful marriages.
Mm.
And I said in that if you want a successful marriage, marry your best friend. Marry somebody who you can talk to a lot, because after a few years, that's all you'll be doing.
That's right. Right? Absolutely. Bang on your...
And so you and I are perhaps lucky small percentage
yes.
that happen to have that. But for the vast majority,
mm.
and this is a great question you said, why is it still relevant?
Mm.
For a vast majority, this doesn't happen. But what happens, right, in India, marriage is not an if question.
Mm.
It's a when question.
Mm.
Right from the time you're a child, they're talking about your marriage. And by some estimate.
As Indians, we love celebrations. Whether it is marriage, and if a man has lived enough, then it's death also.
That's
We just need any reason to go on the streets and dance.
Yeah.
I always.
And now we have the confidence to do it openly.
Open, yes.
Earlier, we used to only do it in our homes 15
yes.
years back.
Yes.
Right? Overseas, when we used to travel, we used to walk around with our heads down, not to be seen.
Right.
Now we do it loudly.
Why do you think so?
I think there's been a major transformation. I think it's finally, people are proud to be Indians, right? Whether it's your passport ranking, whether it is your diplomatic relationships, whether it is soft power, leadership is very important for any organization, right? Whether it's a country or whether it's a company or any pursuit. And I think since independence, we've had some pockets of strong leadership, but by and large, we've been confused.
Mm.
I think this is the first time in our history that we have clarity and vision in terms of what we want to achieve. And I think that is very important. The second thing is the current leadership is not shy about who we are and our background and our history. We don't apologize for our identity.
Absolutely.
Right? All these years, we've somehow been wearing a Western cloak, I mean, clothes aside, but pretending to be something we are not.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And when you start owning up and embracing who you are,
mm-hmm.
I think other people respect you more for that.
Exactly.
Right? And so that's what I see happening. And the third factor, of course, is economic success. As soon as you become a market that people want to be in, as opposed to a land of snake charmers and elephants,
mm.
everybody now suddenly wants a piece of us. I mean, the recent Maldives situation is a great example of soft power, right? And our ability to influence people and the world based on our soft power and our market economy.
And it's only at a situation like this, you can tell Google that I don't like you.
Yeah,
huh?
That's true.
That's what you did.
I did, and I will continue to.
What is the issue there?
Americans, while eventually they do get to tackle monopolies like they've done with big oil, big telco, they've broken all these up over the years, right? They are very reactive in nature, right? Mm. Sometimes it's too late. And because it's their companies that are creating a monopoly, sometimes it benefits them because they're going out and creating monopolies all over the world.
Mm.
So it benefits them to be late to correct these situations. But what we are seeing with Google and Apple to some extent, is they have cornered large swathes of the internet ecosystem
mm.
through bundling and what are monopolistic behavior and made it very difficult for anybody else to prosper in that ecosystem, mm. right? So Google itself, if you think about it, is really a beneficiary of unbundling Microsoft. Microsoft used to bundle their Internet Explorer browser through which you could access the internet
mm.
with their operating system and with their software. Google fought a case and broke that bundling up so they could introduce Chrome, which is the browser through which we all now experience the internet. So they themselves are a beneficiary of anti-monopolistic action.
Mm.
But ultimately, every company wants to be a monopoly. So I don't blame them as much as I blame governments, particularly in the West, not correcting these situations in time, because ultimately entrepreneurship suffers,
mm.
innovation suffers, customers suffer because they have less choice. What incentive do I have as a monopoly to give you better pricing or better products because I'm already a monopoly? So I think that's what Google has done today in India. If you want to run an internet business, you will pay Google 20, 30 to 40% of your revenue as advertising because that's the only way to access customers. And that's fair. I think to some degree, that's fair. You choose how much to advertise. But now what you're saying is you will also pay anywhere between 15% to 30% of your revenue to us if you want to be on our app store.
Wow.
So if I'm going to pay 60 to 70% of my revenue to Google, how am I going to survive as a business? And I think this is a trick that we missed as a country. But if you think about it, like China did, had we handled or had we monitored these entities very closely and given protection, or not even, I won't even say protection, at least given a level playing field to our domestic companies, right? Because the internet ultimately is a weapon. It's not just another medium.
Mm.
It's everything, all your data, everything besides here. How can these companies be allowed to take it out? So if we had done that, we would have had five companies today in search, in email, in social media, which would each be worth 100 billion to 200 billion, right? In addition to the three, four companies that we already have.
Yeah.
That would be transformational for the country. These would become global companies in time, right? Of course, we missed that boat, and that's fine.
But isn't it ironical,
I think there's still time.
Isn't it ironical that the head of that all these companies is an Indian?
Isn't that great?
How do you think in the present situation we can counter this or we can handle this?
I think there's a couple of ways. One is a more passive way, which is, you know, and CCI has already actually passed a very strong order against Google.
Mm-hmm.
Google is simply not implementing it, using tricks of the trade which they've learned globally and trying to squirm out of it. And that's why I said that they will end up paying a very heavy penalty. It'll end badly for them because they're playing with the law.
Mm.
And today's dispensation and government doesn't take that lightly. So I think CCI will come down heavily. They have reserved their order on them, which is Competition Commission of India. So one is a passive role we can play by using organizations such as CCI to ensure there is no monopolistic behavior and the level playing field is available to everyone and nobody's taking advantage of our homegrown companies or our small and medium enterprises, right? That's certainly one way. The other way is a more active way, which the government has already been doing. So if we look at UPI, today, we are the only country where credit cards are struggling because UPI has become the preferred mode of payment.
Absolutely.
Right? Credit card companies take 2-3. American Express takes 4%, right, from the merchant. It's highway robbery.
Mm.
Right? UPI is free. What an incredible piece of innovation.
Amazing.
Right? Second is ONDC, which they're trying to do for e-commerce, what they did for payments.
Mm.
Third is our health initiatives, which again create common public infrastructure for others to build upon.
Mm.
We can do the same thing for App Store.
Let's shift to Shark Tank.
Yes, of course.
I find it very exciting and I find it that's your debut as an actor.
Well, I'm not acting, I'm being myself. But there is some drama you create.
Yeah, yeah.
This is actually as real as it gets. We see the pitcher who comes on stage to pitch when you see them. We have no idea who the pitcher is. We walk on stage and we see the founder coming out. But you're right. I mean, you know this better than anybody else. As soon as there's a camera put on you,
yeah.
However real the show is, there is some drama that comes in because, you know, and here there are 13 cameras on Shark Tank. So, you know, you become a performer at some level, right? You have to.
So any interest in acting? I run an acting school, so I detect a possible actor somewhere.
Oh, yes. You run one of the most popular acting schools. For the longest time, I felt it was not, you know, deep down, maybe it was something I cherished or had value for. But, you know, we always put it down growing up, right? Today,
because we can't do it.
Everybody, there you go, right? You the see, truth is because you can't do it.
That's why we run it down.
Absolutely.
I remember that when we had, all of us had black and white televisions. And then Mr. Malhotra, who was 4x3 Nava house in my next door, he got a color TV. We couldn't deal with it. So we said that he's a corrupt man.
Yeah. You have to justify it to yourself somehow, yes. Right? And so for the longest period, I was in that camp. At this point in my life, I think I'm really enjoying the role that I play on Shark Tank.
Mm.
I don't know if I have the patience or the talent, to be very honest, to be an actor, right? Mm. I have experienced what it is, you know, waiting in vanity vans. Doing in Shark Tank, we have a very different flow, right? We are busy throughout.
No, it's a completely different thing.
Right?
Yeah.
We're
actors
shooting
are paid
straight.
For patience, not for talent.
Okay, there you said it better than I did.
Yeah.
But I don't have that. I couldn't be sitting waiting for one shot, doing one shot and then wrapping up and going home. That's one. Second is I don't think I have the talent. Third, I think I'm far more effective, given everything I've learned, is to continue furthering entrepreneurship in this country. Building companies. So I think my impact in that zone is far-reaching. Adulation and the recognition. I'm now getting through Shark Tank, right? If you miss that part as an actor, because that's what an actor gets. The only part that perhaps is very interesting as an actor, and I envy you for that, is you get to play so many different professions and understand so many different facets, because you have to do some level of research whenever you play a certain character. I think I find that very compelling.
One day you will be acting.
You think?
100%. Okay. 100%, and that's a great thing that can happen, because you must do something which you think you can't.
Take you out of your comfort zone.
Yeah. Yes. I've read somewhere that you are a spiritual person. And what is spirituality to you?
You know, we are seen as a land of believers because we have theoretically so many gods. But reality, historically, if you look at it, we are land of seekers. Mm. And spirituality to me is really about seeking. And, you know, when you said you are restless, right? Perhaps that's what's coming through.
Oh, restlessness and confusion is the most creative state of affairs. That's why I have not had so-called traditional holidays.
Yeah.
In all these 40 years that I have worked, I don't think I have gone to some beach and sort of lay down and sort of...
I can't do that.
I have not done that.
I can't do that myself.
Yeah.
I can't do that.
People say that, why are you so restless? Why do you keep on doing things? That keeps me about who I am. So you're more of an angel than a shark.
I'm more of an angel than a shark. I don't know if the founders who come on Shark Tank would agree with you. They think I'm always trying to get the better deal. But yes, to answer that earlier question in one word, spirituality is seeking.
And there is no end to seeking.
That's right.
That's why you can go on
on. That's right.
It was a pleasure talking to you, Anupam.
Same here, Anupam.
Thank you so much.
Wonderful.
Lovely talking to you. And thank you for watching. Join me next week for another intimate yet engaging debate only on Let's Talk Bharat. I'm Anupam Kher. Namaskar.